apparently some kind of web streaming going on. Okay, good. So the web streaming has started. Hello, folks. My name is Nick Malik, and I'm going to talk a little bit about business architecture for non-business architects, which means if you're a business architect, you might actually be a little bored by the conversation, but that's okay. I'd love to get your feedback. I don't mind questions. I don't mind that you interrupt me. If you ask a really complicated question, I may ask you to come up and talk to me afterward. But for the most part, I think we all benefit from learning what everybody else is interested in knowing. So if you have a question, please jump in. One little bit I do have in my pocket, a kind of a cool thing. It is a $50 Prezi card. And so I'm going to throw in a little fact somewhere along the way during the presentation. At the end, I'm going to ask, and the first person to get that fact right is going to get the card. So let's see if we're see who's paying attention first thing in the morning on a Thursday morning. So what I'm hoping to give to you as a result of this talk is an understanding a little bit about what business architecture is and how to work with a business architect. We're a bunch of ornery folks. We can be a little bit tough to work with if you don't know what we do. I love this box, by the way. Every speaker is standing in the middle of a Christmas present. It's classy in its way. Good little icons there. To understand a little bit about why business architecture does things, and so I'm going to actually kind of walk through a simple business architecture exercise. Now, if you're a business architect, and there's probably one or two in the room, and you say, that's not what I do, that's fine. I've never found a single compendium of all the smart things business architects do, partly because there's not anyone smart enough to write it, and partly because every business uses business architecture a little bit differently. So I'm going to be looking around the room and looking for input as we go. I'm also going to talk a little bit about an open source meta model called the Enterprise Business Motivation Model. It's a descendant of the Business Motivation Model from the Object Management Group. Talk a little bit about artifacts and competencies in case any of you who is not an architect would like to become a business architect. It's not a how-to presentation. I do have another presentation in about 2 hours later today in the same room, just before lunch. And I will talk a little bit more kind of about how to, and that's on aligning business capabilities. So first off, before I really jump into business architecture, I want to ask some simple questions and give you a second to read the slide there. The thing is, when we answer technology questions, we're often thinking in terms of how do I build, and that you can add anything you want after those first four words. Business architects think some of the same things, but they think in terms of how do I build a business function, a business capability, a business process, an information flow, a strategic response. You notice I didn't say the word system yet. Okay, so I want you to think about business processes for a moment. Every organization uses business processes, government, commercial, nonprofit, doesn't matter. Everybody uses, I call them business processes. By the way, if you have a problem with the word business because I'm talking about it and applying it to non-business settings, and those are perfectly valid, I'm going to just ask you to forgive me. There isn't a better word yet. We don't call them organizational processes. So if you happen to be one of the folks who work in the public sector or in non-commercial organizations, just go with me. So if you're looking at your business processes in your organization, maybe just come up with a long list. I've got a process for this and for this and for this and for this and for this. Which ones are important? Well, they're all important. Which ones add value to the product? Which ones add value to the product or service that the organization produces? Add value. Think about what add value means. That doesn't mean human resources doesn't add value to the organization. It means human resources doesn't add value to the product. Human resources puts you in the chair so you can build the product, but it doesn't add value to the product, not directly. Can you tell the difference? Who can? There's your business architect answer. Is your organization one business? Two? Ten? How would you know? How many of you think you work in an organization that is just one business? Good. I actually saw a hand. That's pretty impressive. Maybe that's a particularly simple or clear, very clear business. Those do exist, and they can be quite large. That said, they're not terribly common in organizations that have been around for a while, especially, believe it or not, in the public sector. And then we start changing the word business model to the word business service. When an executive says cut costs, what question should you ask next? So, executive just came to you and said, I want you to tell me how I can cut costs because I've got this target to cut costs by 30% in the manufacturing division. I honestly don't know what division you work in and what department you work in. What question do you ask? How much impact on the business? That's good. That's a good question. What question would you ask of that senior exec? No idea. It's a really tough one. By the way, I didn't ask a simple question. If it was a simple question, we wouldn't need a field to answer it. So think about that, and because these are the types of questions that business architects are employed to answer, and I don't mean to answer on the spot. You don't get to sit down and say, oh, gee, I know the answer, Mr. Executive. It's usually the other way around. I will go find that out for you. And I'll give you five options. By the way, if you give them more than five and they can't count them on the fingers of their one hand, what are they going to do? I'll tell you to go back and give them three. Okay? I'm going to come back to you, Mr. Executive, with five options for cutting costs. Can you think of five different ways to cut costs? I bet you can if you really put your mind to it. I bet you can. So this talk, I'm going to use examples. This one is kind of a generic high-level one, and then I'm going to actually have a very specific example I will use all the way through the whole thing. But this, they're a little different. Mergers and acquisitions. So your organization has just been merged with another. This happens in public sector a lot. Or your company has just bought another company, or your company has just been bought. They're all mergers and acquisition situations. So how do you bring it all together? It's not just a technology problem. There are technology problems. It's a running gag. People know that Microsoft occasionally picks up. By the way, like I said, I worked at Microsoft IT, so I'll use a lot of Microsoft examples. People know that Microsoft buys big companies every now and then, bought Skype. What people don't realize is Microsoft buys 60 companies a year and has for the past two decades. At about that rate. Now, most of them just get dissolved into product. But every now and then, one of them wanders in the door, and it's huge, and we have to figure out how to make all their business processes work. We don't want to tear them apart while doing it. And that's actually the real challenge that most companies face. When they're acquiring another company, you don't want to tear them apart. If you tear them apart, they're not valuable anymore. Where's the value in a company? It's the value add between the stuff that comes in the door as supply and the stuff that goes out the door as product. And that value add is the people who get on the elevator every night. And if you mess up their lives, you mess up their processes, no value. So how do you know where a process should be ripped out and replaced with, we've got the better process, and where it shouldn't? And that goes back to my earlier question, which processes add value? Because the ones that don't add value, rip them out. So if your company was acquired by a much larger organization, do you think your human resources department would change? Yeah. Supporting functions would change. Legal, finance, IT. Do you think the core processes that provide value, well, they would change? They'll change, but not a lot. They're mostly change in marketing and sales. So business architecture helps to figure that out, but how do you figure that out? Well, first you look. What business models does your company or organization involved with? Survey the models. I'll talk a little bit about that. Frame. First you're going to kind of frame your strategy at that point in time. What is it that you want to change? Well, in that case, honestly, if you just got an acquisition, you want to change the inefficiencies. A lot of this stuff was already decided as part of the process of acquiring. Why? Somebody had to ask why. Often it's an attorney. Why are you buying that company? Or why are you being bought? Why are you selling your company as opposed to fighting it? The why matters, because now you have to implement it. So you're going to frame your strategy. I'm going to implement this how? I have measures. I want to have specific measurable objectives. Executives don't like specifics. I'll give it to their underlings. Roll it back up, put the specifics right in front of them, and say, here's what your underlings say we're going to do. Do you agree? Why do you get the executive to agree? Anybody have an idea? Why do you think we have to get the executives to agree to the measurables? I'm picking at people at random, so you got lucky. You're not paying attention, okay. It's morning. Sorry? Anybody else? I heard a voice over here. So they're accountable for the outcomes. That's important. Why else? Got it. If I walk into your office and you're used to doing things in a certain way and I say do things in a different way, what are you going to say? Leave. If I say I've got an executive who agrees, you might be not so quick to say leave. Put might behind the change. Change is hard. Business architects are big change people. All right. So what is business architecture? I had to come up with a definition. For those of you who get on LinkedIn every now and then, you'll see that I spend a good bit of time there. And I actually asked, what's a good definition of business architecture? There's a long thread on the definition of business architecture. I pulled about 40 definitions off of that thread. Clearly, there's not a consensus. Various different organizations have their definition. This is just mine. This does not come from the Business Architecture Working Group or the Object Management Group. This does not come from the Business Architecture Guild. This comes from me. I actually, in one of my blog posts, very, very carefully dissected and then destroyed the one from the Business Architecture Guild. That's where I came back with. You may not agree with every statement. That's the reason why I put my little caveat up front. Specialization of enterprise architecture. So a lot of folks will say, well, business architect isn't a kind of enterprise architect. That's crazy. They're not inside. They're maybe related. And I don't even want to have the conversation. Somebody asked me this morning, if you've got a good BA function, what does an EA do? They do business architecture. It's a little bit like saying, if I've got a good ability to train physicians, what does a pediatrician do? Medicine. It's not a hard answer when you really think about it. Collects and manages functional, structural, and motivational related information. Functional and structural are different. So what a group does and how the group is organized can be quite substantially different, especially in larger organizations. You can have duplicate departments within a company that perform the same function. They're structurally in different places. The question is, does one set a standard for the other? That's an interesting business architecture question. Motivation. What's motivation? Really, what's motivation? It's why you do something, right? It's why we get up in the morning and we do things. We're motivated. I'm willing to bet most of you are pretty motivated to be here, hopefully. Motivation in a business sense is why the business does things. Not just why you build products or why you offer services. That might be just pure financial. We want to make money. It's more than that, though, isn't it? Why do we do it in a certain way? Why do we first do no evil? I love that. That's completely meaningless, but it's fun. Why do we put a window? Why do we put a PC on every desktop? Motivational statements are the ones that senior leaders agree to that will get everybody to not just row the boat, but to row it at the same time and in the same direction. We're talking about mission and vision, and those are parts of business architecture, but they're not the things that drive motivation. Strategy is. Strategy is a desire to change. We'll talk a little bit about how strategy fits with everything else. So when I talk about the motivational elements, I'm talking about mission and vision, principles, strategies, goals, measurables, objectives, initiatives to drive and deliver against those. That's motivational. All that's motivational. And that's the real key place for business architecture. For the purpose of business design, functional improvement, motivational alignment, and decision support. I'll talk a little bit about alignment. The key elements there, that's not an exhaustive list, but those pretty much cover the things that people talk about when they talk about business architecture. Talk about business design. How do you fix the business? It's not broken. It's making money, right? If it wasn't making money, they probably wouldn't be putting money in your pocket as a paycheck. But could it be better? Could it do a better job of competing or providing better customer service or solving whatever social need that a nonprofit might want to solve? Could it do a better job? What does better mean? So you have to answer the question, the purpose of business design is the business has to be fit for purpose. It has to be designed to deliver against what is considered better. Is it? And does that become an important priority if it's not? And if it does become an important priority, there better be a strategy around it. We're going to make the business more efficient. We're going to cut costs. We're going to improve agility. Those are strategies that tie directly to how the business is set up. Functional improvement. Now I'm not talking about changing departments and boundaries and roles. I'm talking about making sure that one set of processes actually works well. So in Microsoft, we were involved with a project where we had one particular piece of a relationship. It took 4 months from the moment the relationship started to the moment everything was in place and we could start making money from it. We cut it down to 4 days. That's just simply functional improvement. We didn't change the organization. We changed the processes. Now, sometimes some of that involved IT, to be completely honest. A lot of it was information stuck in the wrong places. That's fun. Now you get to have some fun with solutions. But not all of it will involve IT. Motivational alignment. Do what you say you will do. I'll come back to that in a bit. Decision support. In a large organization, companies and senior leaders don't even know what their company does. Decision support helps them to understand where they're spending their money, where they're spending their time, where they're spending their thought processes, how much they're spending in each one of those areas. We'll talk a little bit about that. So I'm going to use a meta model as a metaphor. So for those of you who don't know what a meta model is, that's okay. How many of you are pretty well versed in information management, and modeling, that type of thing? Hands. Okay, we've got some folks. You'll have a little easier time as I go through this. How many of you know that you can pretty well read an entity relationship diagram? Ah, goodness. That's real common among technologists. So when you look at the model, it's kind of like an entity diagram, but it isn't. We're talking about terminology. So if you've ever read a book, Domain-Driven Design, this is like a domain model in domain-driven design. The open source meta model I use is the one I developed. It's called the Enterprise Business Motivation Model. That's a link to it. We'll actually go visit it a little bit later. So how does it all relate? That's the core elements of the Enterprise Business Motivation Model. It's 150 elements. Don't worry, you'll actually get the deck. So looking around at the model, I have a little animation going on there. I'm going to zoom in a little bit on one piece, and that is the business model piece itself. Talk a little bit about what is a business model. So we asked the question earlier, how many businesses is your business in? Because a business model is a way of describing that. It's a way of capturing that information. There's a particular individual, you know, Alexander Osterwalder wrote this book, PhD. Young guy, really. And he did a lot of research on what other people were talking about business models and pulled it all together. It's not the best enterprise architecture description of a business model, but it's very accessible. And this is a really good book. I do recommend it to everybody who hasn't already seen it. If you want to be a business architect and you haven't read this book, start over. It's actually really graphically nice of that out. So he proposed a business model canvas, which is a very simple method of describing the pieces that go into a business model. Unfortunately, this becomes really difficult to capture as an enterprise architect. So I did a lot of analysis on that and came up with a way of capturing it as an enterprise architect. So Alexander Osterwalder was a major influence on the enterprise business motivation model. Because none of the other models out there even cared, they didn't have an entity for business model. We wouldn't capture business models. And that became silly very quickly. So I have a question for you. Think about business models for a minute. I'm going to actually give you an example of what a business model is. But I want you to kind of plant this idea in your head, plant this question, because I'm going to come back to it. If somebody says to you, our strategy is blank, 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 do you ever ask the question, who's ours? What do you mean when you say ours? Your strategy is. Which business models is that strategy for? So I'm going to take a look at these various different bits, but the definition I gave down there is composition of business elements. It's actually a pretty straightforward definition. A lot of folks have used it. It's a composition of business elements because it's a compositional concept. A business model is not one thing. It's a grouping of things that makes it unique. The thing that's probably the most unique about it is the value proposition. If I can say that I have a value proposition that my organization provides, and I can say I have three different value propositions, maybe I actually have three different business models. Maybe. I'm going to give you an example. One for a company that most of you are pretty familiar with, Air New Zealand. Now, all the stuff that you see here about Air New Zealand, I picked up by reading online sources. I am not someone who has ever walked into the doors of Air New Zealand. How many business models does Air New Zealand have? So there's a couple that are obvious. They fly you from place to place, don't they? Okay. Now, the interesting thing about passenger travel is there's various different elements of passenger travel. And their public papers, their filings and annual reports, et cetera, really make very clear distinctions that the way they compete and the way they offer value in these three different areas of passenger travel are different. Okay. There's another one you should probably could think of if you thought about it. They do move cargo. How many more business models are in, I want people to venture a guess, how many more business models are there in Air New Zealand? How many of you think that there's six? Raise your hand. Eight? 12. All right. Good. You're guessing high. How many of you have absolutely no idea? Right. I didn't either until I went and started reading their materials. How's that? How many of you know that they offer a training institute? It's a business. They make money. They don't make a lot. They make money on it. Gas turbine repair for non-aviation. It's one of the businesses of Air New Zealand. Wouldn't think of it, but it's listed in their public filings. It's all in there, guys. So a business architect says, well, how many businesses are you in? So we're going to start with those nine businesses, and we're going to say, why are we in nine businesses? That's interesting. That's fascinating stuff. Each one of those businesses is unique and distinct. I'm going to ask a few questions about this analysis. Why are there three different models for passenger traffic, and why not one or four? Can anybody give me a reason why you might think that those are three different business models? Competition. Competition is different in those three areas, isn't it? Very good. Anybody else? That's right. So the resources are different. The processes are different. I saw a hand over here. That's right. They outsource domestic flights to subsidiaries. That's right. So there's a different structure, a functional way that they approach the problem of offering those services. Very good point. The value proposition is very different for each one. And they're not shy about saying so. The long-haul flights, they're not just selling the airline. They're selling New Zealand. I'll be flat out honest with you. They'll say it right out and right up front. They're very closely tied to the tourism side of it. And, you know, as a person coming from the United States, I saw that. There was a lot of appeal to New Zealand's a great place to come visit. Oh, and here's the airline to fly here on. It's not the only airline to fly here on, but it certainly worked for me. I did fly in on ANZ. So why is there only one model for cargo? They have three different classifications for cargo. Why is there only one model? I'm going to go back to one of the earlier answers, the value proposition. Those are three different products within one value proposition. I've got the same customers who want to move cargo. I'm offering them three different speeds, essentially, and amounts of reliability to move that cargo. It's just three different products. It's the same value proposition, same customers. So it's the combination that makes it unique. It's not just the value proposition, not just the products, not just the segments. It's the combination of them that makes it unique. That's what drives the distinction. So if you have to ask yourself, how many business models do you have, you can't just look at one thing. You have to look at the grouping of them and say, is this different enough? And some of it is kind of analysis and some of it is kind of guesswork. I'm not going to pretend this is all science. Some of it's art. So there's subsidiaries, Air Nelson, Eagle Airways, Mount Cook Airline. But you notice I only put one business model covering domestic travel. And it covers their subsidiaries as well. So why is there a business model for domestic travel that covers multiple different organizational functions? Because the value proposition is the same. Because the customers are the same. You're going to the Air New Zealand site, or you're talking to your travel agent for Air New Zealand, you're not going, oh, I'm definitely only going to fly a particular subsidiary. You're probably not thinking that. You look at the tail of the plane, it doesn't say Mount Cook on it. It says Air New Zealand. So if there's not a distinction in branding, if there's not a distinction in customer area, if there's not a distinction in value proposition, it's one business model. Even if the company itself has structured itself structurally in multiple units to solve the problem. That's important because now as part of doing the analysis to be able to make that case to the business about what way you can cut costs, it might be to merge some of those subsidiaries together. That actually is a perfectly rational assessment. And the way you get there is by doing this first. And saying, which one of these is more complicated? Which one of these could be simplified? Which one of these is unique? Which one of these is costing more than it's worth? Right? Which one of these is just a really good use of resources? These are all really valid business architecture questions. So the model of business motivation is really the next step that you have to understand. And I'm going to focus on three elements here that are across the bottom of the screen. Influencer, driver, and business initiative. I'm going to ask the question, well, what does that mean to model those things? What information do I have to collect in order to talk about just those three areas? Now, you notice that the whole enterprise business motivation model is quite substantial. There's something well over 100 different elements in it. Which means that if you were to actually put it all in a database and collect all that data in an organization the size of Air New Zealand, you'd be at it for 2 years, and it would be all out of date by the time you finished. Heck, it'd be out of date by the time you got more than a few days in. Don't do it. Focus on the thing that you need, but I'm going to talk a little bit about these three elements and how they relate to one another in a business architecture standpoint. So I'm going to explode this diagram a little bit. Use color coding a little. Not very good color coding, I don't think. By the way, for those of you who haven't figured it out already, the tool that I'm using here is Sparks Enterprise Architect. Just because it's good for visualizing models, they don't have a special module or anything for business architecture. This is just modeling. What is influence? What's an influencer? What's a driver? And what is a business initiative? I do have, by the way, you will sometimes see me use the words, use the character slash, and I'll give a term, slash, and another term. That's just because when I look at various different literature sources, different terms are used. And so if they both mean the same thing, I'll try to stick them both in the same box. So it literally means you could use the word initiative if you want, or you could use the word program if you want, and I'll think you're using the same word. I'll make that translation in my head. An influencer is someone largely outside the organization. Now, it could be legislation, it could be competition, it could be environment, it could be all kinds of things. But these are things that influence how that business model is going to work. International air travel. There's influencers. Virgin is an influencer to Air New Zealand's international air travel. Okay? If they do something like introduce a new program to make super comfortable seats or cut their costs by 50% and Air New Zealand doesn't respond, good luck. They're going to respond. They're an influencer, but they're not inside the company. They don't get to decide what Air New Zealand will do as a result. The driver does. You notice there's driving stakeholder is one of the types. By the way, the little triangular arrowhead is a type of, or is a. There's a little bit of UML in there. A person can be a driver. If I run around the building and I say, oh no, we have to respond, we have to respond, the sky is falling, and it actually is, you're a driver. If you have money in your pocket and you're a business person who's been given the credibility of the CEO to go and make changes, you're a pretty important driver. Maybe you have the word vice president next to your name. Other things that are drivers are business goals. Now, goals, basically, I'm going to state we're going to achieve such and such, and everybody has to work on my goal. Works. You'll see in my next slide. Air New Zealand has goals. They put it right up in front of their annual report. Very good drivers, very good way of getting people to behave in a certain way to achieve certain things. Business strategies are a way to achieve those goals. This may not be the only way, it's the way you choose. And that comes the fun part. Which way do you choose? Right? If I'm going to walk from one city to another, I might have a number of different options for doing it. Which way am I going to choose to do it? Principles, vision, and mission are basically in my book and in my memo, a type of principle. There can be other principles as well that aren't mission and vision. There can be subtypes of principles, architectural principles or subtypes. How many of you have architectural principles in your organization? All right, good. It's a good grouping there. Architectural principles are useful in software development and in systems management and all the rest of this to help you to figure out what's the right behavior? What should we be doing? You can compare what you are doing with what you should be doing. But it's an individual choice. Those motivate individuals individually. You rarely see a manager get people in the room and go, the principle is X, and so I'm going to measure everybody's performance on the basis of this principle. And the principle is do the right thing. Now, how am I going to measure your performance on the basis of do the right thing? Good luck with that. So principles are individual motivations. They tend to not be so much organizational. Business initiatives are a response. They're a response to a driver. Okay? So we say we're going to, as an organization, respond. So internally, we've set up a strategy, and the strategy is go reduce the cost of fuel because we're spending too much money on airplane fuel. So what's our initiative? Maybe we're going to buy better airplanes. Maybe we're going to retire the airplanes that burn too much fuel. Maybe we're going to do better maintenance so that we can lower the cost of the fuel on those airplanes. Maybe we're going to buy particular types of things that go into airplanes that make them lighter or more fuel efficient. I'm not an airplane expert, you can tell, can't you? So doing that is the initiative. Now there's a person who might be in charge of the initiative and they've got some proposed changes and there's some outcomes they're trying to seek. And it's important that you capture this because if you don't capture it, you can't model it. If you can't model it, you can't deliver it. If you can't deliver it, what did you do with all that money that we gave you to make the company more efficient? We said we're going to make this company more efficient. We're going to cut the cost of jet fuel. Is that free? Have you ever seen a free business change? Anybody ever seen a business change that was free? Okay, good. There's nothing free. Somebody has to actually do some work. It costs money to cut costs. All right? And that's the project itself. People are involved in that project. There might be people, there might be whole teams of people, there could be people throughout the organization. You notice I did not stick the hierarchy of the organization onto this diagram. Okay? And the whole reason for doing it is that success measure. We're going to go and we're going to figure out what's the measure of success. Maybe the cost of gasoline that we spend per passenger mile goes down. Okay, well, that's a good way of measuring it. It's a good success measure. So let's put that to work. So this is pulled right out of their annual reports. Their business goal was improve profitability by more than $195 million per year by fiscal year 15. It's a good goal, actually. As goals go, what makes that a good goal? Very good. It's smart, specific, it's measurable, it's achievable, it's realistic, it's time-bound. It's a smart goal. Someone did their homework. It's a good CEO in that company. It's a good driver. So what are some of the strategies? So then the blue boxes are some of the strategies that I pulled out of their documents. I'm sure there are other strategies, by the way. No organization ever tells anybody all of their strategies. First off, it bores the shareholders to death. But secondly, it doesn't bode well for competition if your competition knows what all your strategies are. So this is all out of public documents. And mostly it's because it's pretty obvious. I mean, every competitor can guess these strategies, or they're doing them themselves, or they can just see the behavior of Air New Zealand. So it's not like it's hidden information. You want to convince your stockholders, in this case, that you're doing good work. And so these are the different strategies. Reduce the fuel costs, improve efficiency and productivity, and eliminate unnecessary expenditure. I like that one. That was a what does that mean? We're going to have some fun with that one as well. The influencers in the orange box. I think it's orange. Yeah. By the way, I never get the same colors on the screen as I get on my laptop, so I always have to look. But the influencers of the orange box, that's stuff outside the control of Air New Zealand. So this is a very simple visualization. Is that a model? Kinda. I could use this when talking to business stakeholders. I could put that on the screen. Technically, if I was actually part of Air New Zealand, I would know more about the initiatives. I only captured three initiatives from their public documents. I'm certain there's way more than three going on. Never seen an organization with three initiatives of that size. So, you know, cutting the cost of fuel, get rid of those 747s. Let's get some really, really cool airplanes that burn a lot less fuel. Oops, Boeing hasn't delivered them yet. That might be a little bit of delay. Develop variable flight schedules. You know, why is that an innovation? It actually is. When you really sit down and think about it, in the airline business, people will schedule, gee, we're going to do two flights a day from here to there for the rest of eternity. But maybe during certain seasons you want to have six flights a day, and other seasons you want to have one. And for Air New Zealand, that's an innovation. That's a strategy. So they're going to do an initiative around that. Now, why? Match capacity to demand fluctuations. So you can see the why in the diagram, okay? You can see that we're going to do this one here because of this one here in order to deliver this here. So there is a traceability on the diagram. Traceability matters to business architects. We have to know why, and we have to be able to show why. It doesn't matter to the business stakeholders themselves, unless they ask. We care. They trust us to care. If they ask, then they don't trust us. Prove that you care, but never show it to anybody. It's just too complicated. People don't get it. So let's make some observations from that simple analysis. Two documents, by the way. Simplest analysis I could do from a business architecture standpoint. And I can make observations about Air New Zealand. Imagine if I had access to 200 documents, 2,000 documents. Imagine if I could talk to the 50 key business leaders in that organization. What observations could I make? There's your business architecture, guys. There's your business architecture. That's the ability to do decision support. Somebody has come back and given that list. Low strategic coverage. There are no announced strategies to grow revenue or market share in 6 of the 9 business models. Interesting. What does that say? 6 of those business models don't matter? If I'm not trying to grow in a business model, does the business model matter? So there's no announced strategy to grow their training business. Why? Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe if they dropped the training business next year, nobody would have a problem with that. Perfectly rational to outsource that. Air New Zealand doesn't actually have to have a training business. I'm sure there's other airlines that train pilots really, really well. And they could just say, we're closing the doors here, and anybody who we want to hire has to be trained by that company over there. Perfectly valid thing to do. But you also have to ask yourself, if you really are in that business and you're maintaining dedicated to being that business, grow it. Some segments lack innovation. Segments being a grouping of your customers. Can you come up with a grouping of customers and say, we've offered no products for that customer? If you can, is there an opportunity to do so? No announced changes in their approach to large organizations. Okay. They've announced lots of changes for individuals. You can get a more comfortable seat. You can buy certain flexible tickets. But nothing for large organizations. What would that say? Maybe there's an opportunity. Okay. This is where business architecture says potentially missed influencers. No mention of trends or influencers outside of this local region of the world. That's interesting. Maybe there are no influencers outside of this region. Do you believe that? Okay, don't believe it. There are influencers, they're worldwide. We live in an ever shrinking world. But if we're not mentioning them, maybe we're not looking. The influencer you ignore is the one that puts you out of business. If I say Apple iPod, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Hunkering down. Only 2 strategies require improvements in the capabilities. They're not trying to change their organization to respond to the market. They're trying to just keep costs low. Hunkering down is a perfectly valid strategy, but not for more than a few years. Why? Why is it not a good strategy 2 years in? This is an old expression used by the Native Americans in the United States who would grow corn, and 10% of the crop, about, would be saved for next year because they would use it to plant the seeds for the next year's crop. If they had a particularly bad year, they might not get enough corn to feed the tribe or clan through the winter. And that next year, if the spring came around and they had eaten the seed corn, what are they going to plant? So that becomes an interesting problem. Now, if you eat the seed corn, you're going to have to respond in some other way, some rather heroic way. Sometimes Indian tribes would attack one another to steal the seed corn, okay, in a time of drought or famine. If you hunker down, you're going to eat your seed corn. Your really smart people are going to leave. Okay, there's nothing changing. There's nothing growing. There's nothing new. Now, in the economy, I'm sure it's hit you guys just as hard as hit everybody else. If there's high unemployment, maybe good people won't leave. Will they be happy? If I make a person stay just because he can't get a job somewhere else, does that mean he's a happy employee? Eh, not necessarily. It just means the moment the economy gets better, then everyone's going to bolt for the door. That's not a way to build a business, guys. Hunkering down demonstrates that you're eating your seed corn. So, one of the key challenges of business architecture, and people will say this a lot, especially in the enterprise architecture circles, is that business architecture is about alignment. It's about getting everything aligned. So explain in 10 words or less what alignment is. Most of your executives don't have a clue. Some of them will go, I want everything to work right. What does that mean? Cut costs. Okay, how? So one of the strategies that was on this list from Air New Zealand, I want to point out here, is called eliminate unnecessary expenditure. How do we eliminate unnecessary expenditure? What's unnecessary? It's not aligned. Any expenditure that is not aligned is unnecessary. That's a way of defining unnecessary. Not the right way, it's a way. Okay? So alignment is there to say that we're going to do what we say we will do. That's what alignment means. Very simple phrase. Okay, do what you say you will do. Some of the best business leaders in the world just live according to that one phrase. If you say you're going to cut costs by 20%, do it. Don't say you're going to do it. I'm going to hold you accountable. In 2 years, I want to come back, and if your costs aren't 20% less, I'm taking it out of your income, which might be more than we pay you. Okay? Do it. Alignment says we're going to do what we say we will do, which means I'm going to look at the list of strategies, and I'm going to make sure that the investments that we're making are going to deliver the strategy. They can't just be aligned. We can't just come back and say, I think it's aligned. That looks good. Can't just look good. Has to deliver on it. So somebody comes back and says, oh, well, we want to put in the SOA initiative inside of IT. And we're going to invest, and we're going to put in a whole bunch of SOA infrastructure, and we're going to build a whole bunch of services. You know, my first question is, what business strategy are you supporting? And is it necessary to do this to get that strategy to work? And 80% of the time, the answer is no. And then we start asking another question. What business strategy are we supporting? If we can tie that to cutting costs, sure. That better be a high-level business strategy. That better be something that your senior executives want you to do. Sometimes the business doesn't say cut costs. Sometimes they say cut costs at all, you know, at every measure. Chop limbs off if necessary. Okay? Big changeover initiatives like a SOA strategy, which I've seen in some organizations, they'll spend millions putting in a SOA strategy and then wonder why they didn't get any value out of it. I like SOA, by the way. I'm a SOA architect. But I believe you do it in increments. But the point is that you have to do what you say you will do. So alignment is proving that. Alignment is saying that what the initiatives are that we're performing in the business, and that is not just IT, that is improving a process, that's changing a function, that's merging two areas together, that's splitting them apart. Okay, that's introducing a new product. They were doing it for the reasons that we have said that we were going to do them. Okay? That's what business alignment is. Okay? Governance, which is the other half of alignment, is ensuring we'll do and have done what we said we'd do. Governance is coming back and checking. Okay, so if I say it's really important for my strategy to do these five things, did those five things get done? You can't wait to the end to ask. If you waited to the end to ask, you're going to find out that three got done and two, you have to stand in front of your CEO with egg on your face. Anybody ever stood in front of their CEO with egg on their face? Was it comfortable? Was that a warm, fuzzy experience? No, I didn't. It's not a good feeling. So you don't wait to the end. You do it all along the way. That's called governance. Governance just makes sure that you're doing what you said you were going to do and that you did it and that you measured it. That's all. Just proof. So the initiatives. This is part of alignment. If we say that we're going to do a strategy for a business model, was that an important business model? Is it a business model that we want to do a strategy for? If I have two strategies and they conflict, or I'm out of resources and I have 50 strategies and enough to serve five, which ones are more important? Well, you got to go back to the importance of the business model. Sometimes a business model doesn't make a lot of money, but it's very, very important. And so the initiatives and the strategies tied to that model are going to rise up, even if it's not the one that makes the money. Okay, I like to pick on Microsoft. I'm going to pick on Microsoft again. Okay. Any of you use Bing? Raise your hand if you use Bing. I actually like Bing. It's actually pretty cool. It gives me good answers. Okay. How much money does Bing make for Microsoft? If any of you give a number greater than zero, I'm going to laugh. Okay. So the reality is the money we make on Windows versus the money we make on Bing, big difference. Okay, which one is strategically important? Bing is strategically important. So is Windows. But if there's initiatives that need to be done, we're going to put Bing on that list. Even though it doesn't make any money yet, hopefully it will. It's amazing to watch as Google can make billions and Bing makes, never mind. So the way that you approach your initiatives is you really have to come up with a portfolio. It's a list. It's a pile of the initiatives you're going to do. And you're going to manage that portfolio kind of like you would a financial instrument. Okay? You're going to look at the return. You're going to look at the customer service value. You're going to look at the operational value, et cetera. Don't just come up with one way. Use three different ways to come up with that list. Most organizations use bottom-up. That is, somebody deep down in the company says, I need to improve my application. My big process is four steps. It could be two. Okay, that's kind of bottom-up. People will write up a business case or some document similar to that and submit it to their IT group, and their IT group will look at a list of business cases and say, this nine of them, these look pretty good. Maybe the ROI is good on those. That's bottom-up. Okay, because you're not really trying to change big things. You're trying to do small changes around the edges. Right? Middle-out is when you've got an architect who comes along and says, we've got this great ability to do this one thing. We're not really using it very, very well. We're only using it in this one area. Let's use it in nine areas. Let's reuse. That's kind of where your middle-out has its strengths. Top-down is, I've got to come up with a way to improve the way my business treats business passengers on my airline. Okay, and we're going to do that by project. Introducing a new product and changing some seat functions features. Okay, that's a business initiative top down because I know that it's driven by a strategy. So what does the business architect do? He models the business. All that bit about the enterprise business motivation model is modeling the business. It's coming back and saying, what are the parts that I have to understand? If I don't understand all of those parts, am I missing something? Collaborate and discover. Work with other domain architects. Information architect is a domain architect. Technology architect or solution architect, those are domain architects. Is there a fixed list of types of architects, by the way? Do you believe there's a fixed list of types? Some people believe the BATE model, business application, information, and technology, which is not in the right order, but it sounds like a good word, that's a model of the types of architects. Yeah, it was proposed a long time ago. I don't know that there is a fixed list. You get a bunch of architects in the room, you can debate it for a few hours. You can really waste time. So collaborate and discover, work with other architects, enterprise architects, domain architects to recognize opportunities and to align to principles. So this is a big part of what business architects do. Are my initiatives aligned with your initiatives? Are my initiatives as important as yours? Plan them. So suggesting a list of initiatives is not a single PowerPoint slide that says, do A and B and C. How much is it going to cost? What are you going to deliver? What are they dependent upon? Working with your other domain architects to figure that out and figure out, is it feasible, is it reasonable, is it cost effective? That's some of that initial planning, and it happens before you've even proposed this to the business and come back and said you really should invest in A versus B, because I'm going to give you five options to cut costs. And option one is going to require three initiatives. I better have done at least a little bit of planning for those three initiatives so I can tell my management what it's going to mean if he chooses option A. So that's planning the initiatives. I like this question. Does it look like there? I haven't answered the question? I haven't answered the question. All right. Is business architecture part of IT? How many of you now, you can drain the slide if you want. I'll let you look and read it. How many of you think that business architects should report to, ultimately, the CIO? No hands. Wow, how many of you think they should report ultimately to some other business function that goes up to the CEO? Okay, got a good smattering of hands. Here's the interesting part, and I've seen both ways done, by the way. Organizations where the business architects report outside of IT tend to do a lousy job of promoting their business architects. It's a really rough career path. This is a new business function. And if you're just getting started as a business architect, go work in one of the ones where it reports to IT first so that you won't be fired in the first 6 months. Okay. Get the job under your belt. Then move over to one of those other companies or get your company to move over the function because now you're cooler than everybody else. All right. But the reality is that if your business architects are not part of a group of people who self-support, take care of each other, have a management chain that believes in them, that is part of a process that they're going to force their way into. Okay? If you're not in that category, you're going to have a real hard time owning your career path. You will hate your job. On the other hand, it sounds great, doesn't it? So this is why the yes and the no. And this is a hard question to answer. And accounting, nobody even questions. You know that almost every company has an accounting department? Fascinating. Why? Why not just hire a dozen different accountants and scatter them throughout the company? Why have a department? Well, because you can support each other. You can have common rules and policies and talk to one another on a regular basis. And maybe even promote people to new positions. It matters. If you're going to do this for the long haul, think about where it's going to live. There's nothing wrong with it living under the CIO if the CIO will be that advocate to make sure that the business architects are actually doing work for other areas of the business. There's nothing wrong with either way. There's no right answer there. How to work with a business architect. So if you're not going to go try to jump tomorrow to become a business architect, I kind of hope you don't all try to tomorrow to become a business architect. You have to figure out some ways to talk to them. Here's a few couple suggestions, right? Learn the common taxonomies. Business architects have a really hard job of getting everyone to use the same words. They're never going to succeed in getting different business people in different parts of the business to use the same words. But if among the architects you can use the same words and then just translate when you're talking to the business, you'll get a lot more consistency. Learn what those taxonomies are. They do exist. A standard taxonomy of business processes, learn it. Assist with the data collection. Somebody says, I need to know how mature such and such system is, or such and such information is, it high quality, or such and such processes, do they work well? And if you know that stuff, share it. Okay, just assist with the data collection. It's really hard to collect that data. Okay, sometimes IT, you're in regular IT and IT to business meetings, IT with their customers, and the business architect isn't in the meeting. Invite them in. That helps. It helps immeasurably. If the business tells you, I need such and such to happen, and the business architect says, I've already planned that, wouldn't that make life a little better? How to become a business architect. How many of you are not a business architect but think you might want to be sometime in the future? Come on, raise your hand. All right, I like that. That's good. So here's some of the key tricks. Learn the tools and techniques. There are certification programs, but they're just becoming. I'm not going to pretend that they're very strong yet. They're not. Probably the best thing to do, build your business skills, find a mentor, and try to tie yourself to an existing either EA or BA program. It is almost certainly the most rational way. That's how I did it. That's how everyone I know who's become a business architect has done it, is with those bottom 3 points. But there is a growing body of knowledge in business architecture. There are communities that discuss it. Join them. Talk to people. Nothing wrong with it. That's a whole career path on one slide. Look at that. So the enterprise business motivation model, we really don't have time to do much of a demo of it, so I'll bring it up and point out one or two things about it, but I'm not going to really spend a bunch of time demoing it. The various different influencers that went into building the motivation model are there. So I've already brought it up, so I don't have to click the link. So if you were to click on that link, it would take you to a very simple website. You go to explore, visit the model, and you've got the enterprise business motivation model. Every one of these different viewpoints is a subset of the enterprise business motivation model that is specific to one set of concerns. So the strategy viewpoint is specific to the concerns of people who want to make sure that their strategies are aligned to the organization. The process viewpoint, for people who are more business process focused, if it comes up. Never had one not come up. There it goes. Talks about how you align your business activities to the various different portions of the organization, as well as your technology. You'll notice I've got applications and data objects in here as well. Use cases. Understanding how your drivers influence the organization. So all of these are different views. If you want to know what any one of those terms mean, you click it. And it'll give you the definition. So this just gives you an idea of the different terms and terminology of business architecture. It's a way of having a common language. The goal of me creating this model was to bring together the various different frameworks that existed, because there's a number of frameworks on business architecture that don't use the same terms. They overlap, they conflict, some of them are missing major gaps, so this is a way of just bringing it all together. There's no methodology attached to it, because the idea is to support existing methods. Some related content, because this is one of those required slides. Some resources to be able to consider, if you get you will all get the deck, I hope. And please give me good reviews. Questions in the last few minutes?